right, so you wound up headed back to New Jersey. You requested a transfer for personal reasons. You wind up as the senior process engineer at SO Research and Engineering. What were your responsibilities in that position?
Okay. I actually worked on a number of projects. Mm-hmm. The first one I worked on was the one I had worked on at the lab, which was hydrocracking, which was an upgrading of petroleum. And from there, I worked on a process which had been developed in the lab to do get butadiene out of a butadiene stream using a fluid bed extraction method with Cooper's core. And then I looked at I had several people working from. The work was being done, the pilot plant was being built in Baton Rouge, big pilot plant. The work had been done by somebody at Basic Research in Linden, and I was sort of coordinating this and looking at the various problems, and there were many problems. My boss and I finally told them it wouldn't work, and that was not good news for them, for the boss. And it cost my boss a demotion. It cost me a promotion for a while. I learned very early, bad news, you don't tell. You know, the politics of bad news.
How long did you work on the project before you had to break this bad news?
Probably a year, 6 months to a year. And it was a matter that when you adsorb the butadiene on Cooper's chloride, and when you did that, the Cooper's chloride softened and agglomerated, and so you couldn't do it in a fluid bed. In the lab, you could because it was, you know, smaller. Mm-hmm. And the huge fluid bed just didn't work. And a fair amount of money had gone down the tubes. It happens. I mean, but, and you asked me whether at that point how I felt. And I already was looking at becoming a research advisor, which was a strategic position. Mm-hmm. That was sort of my end goal within ESSA.
Okay.
Of course, I was told I wasn't doing that well. I'd been doing very well in Baton Rouge, and all of a sudden I wasn't doing well. Bad news, you know, mm-hmm. carries its price. But neither here nor there. And then I went into low-cost, high-quality polypropylene. There's a long story with SO and polypropylene. And that was being, I was the process engineer responsible for looking at the economics, looking at whether this would work, et cetera, et cetera. Et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I now had a much broader view than just being data. I didn't handle it.
Right.
But I was still the senior process engineer.
Okay.
Actually, I wasn't a senior process engineer. I was still a process engineer. My final position was senior process engineer, which, and my resignation and promotion were announced in the same letter. Now, you can delete that too, but it's a very interesting thing that happened.
You want to tell us what that was?
Sure, I'll tell you, but we're going to, I mean.
You can decide later whether you want to delete it.
The word was that nobody was getting promoted in the division until Letterman got promoted. I had a PhD, I had 6 years with the company, and successful in years. I already had decided I was going to go back to teaching. walk in, and there was a requirement of 60 days notice. And I walked into my boss and I said, H, I'm going to resign effective such and such. I'm going on vacation, I've got to tell you now. But I'm going back to teaching. He said, well, I wish you'd think about that. And then I had a year before I refused a job at Lummis and told them that unless things changed, I was going to be looking for a job. Anyway, the assistant division director calls me up and says, Pete, I'm in New York, can you stay? I want to talk to you. I said, sure, I'll stay. I mean, I didn't work in an 8-to-5 or 9-to-5 job. And he comes, goes into the office and he says, calls me in the office after 5, says, you know, you're getting promoted, I wish you'd think. And you didn't tell me. I told you, you should tell me before you do anything drastic. I said, Norm, I told you a year ago. And he said, well, you're getting promoted. Here's the raise. And the raise was considerable. It was $100 a month on a $14,000 a year salary. And it was not a bad raise. And I said, no, I'm not going to change my mind. So I went to see the division director, who was a very nice guy. And I said, look, I know you can't give me the promotion. It wouldn't look good. But you ought to, it'd be nice if you gave me the raise. It would cost you $100 one month. And, you know, we would be his friends. And he said, no decision has been made. And he was a nice guy. The previous division director was not. And I went off on vacation. I come back. And a good friend of mine walks in, who's a senior guy in the department, and said, congratulations, Pete. I said, are you congratulating me? I had finally been told I was getting promoted, but I couldn't say anything because it was so unusual. I said, Bob, what's going on? He said, well, you've been promoted. Congratulations. You deserve it. I said, well, then you also know I'm leaving. No. Didn't know that. The announcement hadn't been made. It had been made inadvertently the Friday before, not by this assistant director, but by his stand-in. Anyway, that afternoon, the announcement came out. We are pleased to announce that Dr. Leonard will blah. We regret to announce that Dr. Leonard will blah. I was going to teaching, so it didn't really. And I was a consultant for them for a while after that. Mm. I had 6 good years there. It was a wonderful thing. And that's really digressing, but.
I noticed, I was actually going to ask about this, because based on your resume, it seemed to indicate that you were at SO in 1966, but you were a lecturer at Columbia
right
from 65 to 66. How did that
I was work? Asked to teach process economics at Columbia, mm-hmm. and at night we could teach evening. I mean, they didn't object to that.
Right.
Company cleared it. I mean, you'd go in and say, and they'd say, fine. So I taught process economics at Columbia.
Was that something that you pursued? Did someone come from Columbia?
I don't remember how it happened, but Elmer Gadden asked me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, you know, I had the SO experience on process economics and process design. So I could bring the current thinking on process evaluation there.
Okay. And so, I mean, you indicated that you wanted to return to teaching.
Right.
Was this lectureship what brought you to that point, or was there something else that made you
think? I don't remember. The lectureship wasn't.
Okay.
I had taught all the time. Not all the time. For example, I taught a course note course. I was a naval reserve officer, and which we didn't go into, but that's fine. And I taught for the Navy at Reserve School Baton Rouge. I taught oceanography.
Huh?
I learned oceanography along with the students. They needed a guy, with a master's degree or better in science. Well, I qualified.
Mm-hmm.
I was senior enough, so I was an instructor.
Had you sought that out?
Huh?
Had you sought that out, or did they seek you out?
In that case, they were looking for somebody to do it, and I said, I'll do it. Okay. Now, it's not that formal.
So after leaving ESSO, you wind up becoming... All right, let me ask this. Did you have a teaching position in line, or at least the beginnings of a teaching position in line before you left ESSO? Or was this I'm going to become an instructor again. I don't want to be at ESSO. I'm just going to move on.
I looked for teaching jobs.
Okay.
And I had two teaching offers. Actually, three.
Mm-hmm.
NYU, Brooklyn Poly, and JIT. And I decided to go to... So I have a job in hand, signed, sealed, and delivered before I resigned.
Okay. Why did you wind up choosing the Polytechnic Institute?
I like Jim Kahn. I was going to say Kostick, but it isn't Kostick. I'll have to get you the last name. I like the program. They wanted me to come in and do a process engineering capstone course,
mm-hmm.
10 credits in 2 semesters. Offered me an associate professorship. NYU had offered me an assistant professorship and upgraded it to associate.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed like a good situation.
And what were your responsibilities? Was it purely just teaching? Did you also have to do research? Were you expected to bring in grants?
At that time, it wasn't quite that way.
Okay.
I was expected to do some research,
mm-hmm.
or do graduate student. I was expected to teach. My first job was to develop this capstone course. Which, you know, 10 credits is a fair, and teach it, and teach other things too.
Okay. Now, during this period of time, while at your Polytechnic, I did take note that you served on the garbage committee of New Providence in Jersey from 68 to 70 to develop a solid waste management policy, which, of course, you know, based on what you do later, it did seem quite interesting. So I'd like to hear a little bit about how you became involved in that. But I also noticed during this period of time, you wind up having a lot of publications on computers in research and development, trends in education, in engineering education. You have one publication on confidentiality, another one on job mobility, and also one on pollution technology and the public.
All odd things all over the map.
Yes, and so I'm wondering what it is that you saw yourself as doing, where you saw yourself, your career, your interests going.
I don't think this had to do very much with my career.
Okay.
Again, right place, right time, where hole needed to be filled. The garbage committee... I don't remember exactly how I got on it, but we were having a problem in New Providence with whether garbage should be collected or not, and how it should be collected, and a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I got appointed to that. And I was the engineer pretty much of record. And I, as you know, I was a professional engineer, which didn't hurt things.
Right.
It was one of the civic things, you know, do something. I had been gotten involved in town very early because I had a problem with house we bought. Anyway, I got that, and the paper on confidentiality and mobility, because I became chairman of the Professional Development Committee of the AICHE at that time, 72. Computers was part of my teaching, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
I extended that from my teaching. What else was there?
Pollution technology in the public?
Well, it was interesting. I started getting interested in various kinds of pollution. I wrote this thing on solid waste management, which was part of the encyclopedia, which I got started because of the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And I had students who were looking at various types of pollution. I was also an advisor to New York, and that isn't in there, New York City Department of Environmental Protection.
Okay.
That's, it was a minor thing, but so there were sort of, those were the hot areas at the time. I really got backed into the whole environmental pollution area through this garbage committee.
Mm-hmm.
And then students, I had students who, oh, and I did one other thing. Maybe the reason for the pollution in the public was I, at Poly, got a grant from NSF to take, I don't want to use disadvantage, maybe that's the right word, students into a summer program to study environment.
Hmm.
I had that for, I think, 2 or 3 years. And that led to, then again, to, you know, the pollution issue. I'd have to look at that paper to see really, you know, what the genesis was.
Okay.
But I also thought at the time that pollution was not a single media operation, that it was multimedia. And at that time, everybody looked at water as water, air as air, and solid waste as solid waste. Land was free still. And I looked at it and said, gee, you know, you got to look at all three things at once. And I wanted to establish a program that did that at Poly. I thought that was it. And there was a guy in civil engineering, very senior, Paul DeMarco, who I think it that last name, who called me up and said, Peter, if you do this, I'll have you buy the blank. And so I didn't do it. One. Two, I had put in for an application for a grant, and it was almost an impossible grant to get because it had to go through three federal agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was multi. You know, today, that would not be a problem. Everybody understands that. But I thought it was important to train people in multimedia. And anyway, so that didn't quite work out. That's all right. I mean, things, by that time, I was the associate department chair.
Mm-hmm.
That may be the genesis of that paper. I just don't know for sure.
So during your time at Polytechnic, what did you see yourself, once you got there, did you see yourself remaining in academia?
Yeah, I figured I'd stay at Poly and become department chair or something.
Okay. So you're quite happy being there and just working with the students and teaching? And
doing some consulting.
Doing some consulting. Were you consulting for anyone other than ESSO? I mean, formally? Or I guess informally as well?
You know, I don't really recall at this point.
Okay. And in terms of your family, had it grown in size?
Yes, we had a daughter too also.
Okay, so two kids. And was your wife still stay at home?
My wife basically stayed at home. Did a lot of volunteer work.
Okay.
Until 1972. She took some courses. But not very much.
Okay.
Our daughter went into kindergarten. She.
Right. Once the kids are in school, you have a bit more time. Okay.
We also managed to put her into a full time day kindergarten.
Okay. Is there anything else during this period of time in your career or? In your life that you found significant that you wanted to discuss?
Well, there were. This, of course, was the Vietnam era.
Right.
And Poly was no different than many other schools. We had a major sit-in.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a flag burning of the ROTC flag.
Mm-hmm.
And Lieutenant Commander Letterman became chairman of the ROTC Evaluation Committee.
Mm.
Which was, I mean, some people looked at me and said, "You a military officer, how can you do this? You're laughing," but this was dead serious.
Mm.
So I had gotten myself a name in the faculty to be able to do that. I mean, this was not, and that took a fair amount of time. I was very active in the ICHE at the time. Fairly active, I was in the program side at that point. Having started as chairman of the pilot plan subcommittee or committee, and became chairman of the what was then the unit operations of process engineering division of the program.
Had you been involved with AICHE throughout this whole career? You know, when did you start graduate school, undergraduate?
Well, I've been a member of AICHE since 1953. I became active when I was in Baton Rouge, in this pilot plant work and stuff. So I was active in those areas. I don't remember when I was chairman of the New Jersey section. I think it was later, but I was chairman of a national committee in 70 to 73, which was fairly, another one of those things that just happened. And then I stopped for a while and became active again. But I've certainly been very active.
What drew you into active service for that organization? Was it simply that you felt that it was a professional duty that you become involved? Did you want to contribute to something overall for?
A, it was a networking opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
B, it was a chance to give back. And while at Michigan, I mean, the Michigan senior faculty down there was very active AICHE-wise nationally. And so it was almost a natural as compared to today when it's not that way. How I got involved in professional development, I don't remember exactly, but I was vice chairman when the chairman died, and so I became chairman.
Mm-hmm.
It starts out as networking and meeting people, and then it sort of grows on itself.
What is it that, I mean, did you have, I know you were involved in various committees and you had various positions, but is there something that you felt needed to be achieved in the United States with this organization? Was there something that you saw this organization as doing?
I think it was an important organization in two ways. One, it represented our profession.
Mm.
No other organization really did that. So I was a member of my profession. And that's probably most important. And as such, representing the profession, it's important that we provide information, and it came later, to the public in a way that is neutral is the wrong word, but neutral is what
mm-hmm.
I could do, on important issues. Where we can contribute, where we have done,
mm-hmm.
and do, and hopefully be listened to. It also comes that my wife was very active in Lincoln and voted, and at one time was president of the League nationally.
Mm.
So, you know, it's part of the family genes also. No, seriously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's this interest in, you know, serving your profession, since your profession is also serving you, right? There's this inherent value to it, but also this component where you're trying to bring, I know, neutral, maybe unbiased, or...
Unbiased is probably...
This sort of responsibility to the broader public to bring knowledge which they can't necessarily understand on their own, and bring it to them in a way that they can.
Yeah.
Wind up understanding. Do you think, you know, you raise the fact that, you know, there's the Vietnam period. We, you know, clearly, you know, you went through also Sputnik, the space race. Did you see greater national scientific issues becoming a part of your work? Was it something that you felt a responsibility more generally to science to contribute in some way? Or was it more about the profession itself?
Well, I obviously saw that science needed to make contributions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you asked me, did I make those contributions? Obviously, I didn't work in so many of those areas. But I think... I think it was important for this country that we do have a strong, not just science, but technological underpinning and gestalt.
Hmm. I ask that in some ways, I think in many interviews that I've done, once someone has children and those children are in school, science education usually becomes an interesting topic during an oral history interview, because there are a lot of thoughts about science education in the United States. And I would imagine that during the 60s and 70s, with the rise of a more scientific nation, right, the commitment to the space race and whatnot, education was one way, and then later on, education changed.
That's interesting. I never looked at it that way.
Okay.
And my kids are both non-scientists.
Mm-hmm.
One is a lawyer, and was a lawyer from the get-go. The other, very good in math. Very good in economics, and as a banker.
Mm-hmm.
So science is not it was never a focal point for us, interestingly.
Okay.
You know, Dad was the engineer, he handled the technical things.
Is there anything else from this period of time while you were at Polytechnic that sort of stands out as something you'd like to discuss, or is there anything that we've sort of missed?
Well, I obviously became involved in the environmental area.
Right.
Very much so. Felt very strongly about the contribution I made in the process engineering education area. Interestingly enough, I almost left Poly the year before to go to the EPA
mm-hmm.
and was offered a job in Cincinnati that I didn't take. And when the next period came along, that offer, that job came to me, I didn't look for it.
Okay.
And I surprised my colleagues when I was up for promotion and resigned.
So that's twice where you're getting a promotion and then,
well,
I know you didn't necessarily know about it at SO to begin with, but.
Yeah. Well, here, I knew I was in for promotion. I knew the dean had pushed it and then decided no, because I hadn't gotten enough grants.
Mm-hmm.
While the provost was ready to put it through anyway, and the promotions tenure committee came to interview me about another guy, and I said, well, you know, I'm up for promotion, but I'm leaving. But again, I didn't look for that job.
Mm-hmm.
It came to me.
I was actually thinking, given the time, this might be a good point to stop since we're at another transition period.
Do you mind that we stop?
No, not at all.
I mean, we've been at it for
a while.
Yeah. So
without a break, and I hope this is, well, have you